Good afternoon. I'd like to call this meeting of the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee to order at 1:34 p.m. We are in Bell's Room 105 of the Thomas Stewart Office Building here in the nation's most beautiful capital city of Juneau, Alaska. Today is February 28th. Members present, Senator Merrick, Senator Dunbar, Senator Bishop, Senator Gray Jackson, and myself, Senator Bjorkman. Let the record reflect that we have a quorum to conduct business. Please turn off or silence your cell phones. I would like to recognize and welcome our recording secretary, Mary Gwen Kawakami, and LIO moderator, Doug Bridges. Today we have two items on our agenda. First up is Senate Bill 121, pharmacies, pharmacists, and benefit managers. Next, we have Senate Bill 115, physician assistant scope of practice. First up, we have Senate Bill 121. Today, joining us in Senate Labor and Commerce is Senator Giesel and her staff, Jane Conway. Please join us, Senator Giesel, and welcome to Senate Labor and Commerce.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Senator Kathy Giesel. I have the honor of representing Senate District E in the Senate. Thank you for hearing Senate Bill 121 today, Mr. Chairman. This bill is about pharmacy benefit managers. Now, I know this is a very informed committee. I also know that the public is probably listening, so I will be a little bit basic here, but pharmacy benefit managers, this is a very, very complex subject. These entities that exist in our pharmaceutical drug chain are very obscure. They like to remain hidden, but they are as deadly as any virus out there. And that's what I want to highlight before we even start this. The reason we're looking at these entities is that they significantly affect the price of prescription drugs. And their effects are not transparent. This bill it was introduced last year, but we've spent the last year and a half working on it. We worked all interim on it. The bill you see before you, just has been a tremendous amount of work trying to get it right, trying to get it clear. We worked with the Division of Retirement and Benefits. They're the people that actually contract with the pharmacy benefit manager for the state of Alaska. We worked with the Division of Insurance. They have a role in this. And we worked with the Department of Law, which you might wonder about. The reason the law became involved is these pharmacy benefit managers have contracts with the state. They contract through the Division of Retirement and Benefits. So in order to actually determine how much money the state was losing in its transactions through these pharmacy benefit managers, we needed to see the contracts. These contracts are secret. You can't actually get at the numbers. That's how the Department of Law became involved. We had to seek out their authorization to see the contracts. We couldn't see it all. You'll hear about that as you hear the bill. On a positive note, there is a companion bill, and that's really helpful because this is such a complex subject. I actually picked this bill up originally back in about 2015. Senator Dennis Egan, some of you knew him, served in the legislature. He carried this bill back before most people even knew about pharmacy benefit managers. And at that time, in 2018, actually, with the help of Representative David Guttenberg, we passed the first pharmacy benefit, this transparency bill. That bill prevented pharmacy benefit managers from gagging pharmacists. There was a gag rule in place previous to that bill, which prevented pharmacists from saying to the customer, there's actually a less expensive generic that will do the same thing as this brand name drug, and you'd save X amount of money, or you would save X amount of money if you paid cash for this rather than going through your insurance. The pharmacists were prevented from actually disclosing that to their customers. That bill
removed that gag. The purpose of this bill is transparency, as you see in the title, transparency in pricing and giving patients freedom of choice in where they get their drugs and how much they pay for them. The largest three pharmacy benefit managers take in profits of approximately, well, actually more than $300 billion a year. So where does that money come from? What you're going to find out is a lot of it comes out of customers' pockets and out of the state of Alaska. Congress itself is trying to do something about this. Maybe you've seen some articles in the paper about this in various publications. The poor old Congress, they can't get much done these days. And so they actually have lots of hearings on the subject and then set the subject aside. But we're not going to do that. We're going to pursue this. Lots of states are taking action on this themselves. There is a huge amount of information out about it. So in your packet, you're going to see a unique subject or the unique document, and that's a bibliography. We couldn't give you all the documents. You couldn't read them anyway. But this bibliography will give you lists of the articles and summaries about them. If you're interested, the links are there so you can look it up and actually see the information. So as I said, Mr. Chairman, this is a complex topic. It's very technical. And because of that, I would suggest, Mr. Chairman, that instead of going through a sectional at the moment, that you allow Brandy to go through this PowerPoint, which will kind of lay groundwork, not only for members of the committee, many of you know this information, but for members of the public who also care about this, and this way could get it informed. And then the section will be more meaningful. So at your pleasure, Mr. Chairman, thank you for hearing the bill.
Thank you very much, Senator Giesel. For the record, I'd like to let folks know that we were joined at 1:35 by the Honorable Representative Justin Ruffridge. Ms. Brandy, would you like to join us at the table?
Good afternoon. I'd like to call this meeting of the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee to order at 1:34 p.m. We are in Bell's Room 105 of the Thomas Stewart Office Building here in the nation's most beautiful capital city of Juneau, Alaska. Today is February 28th. Members present, Senator Merrick, Senator Dunbar, Senator Bishop, Senator Gray Jackson, and myself, Senator Bjorken. Let the record reflect that we have a quorum to conduct business. Please turn off or silence your cell phones. I would like to recognize and welcome our recording secretary, Mary Gwen Kawakami, and LIO moderator, Doug Bridges. Today we have two items on our agenda. First up is Senate Bill 121, Pharmacies, Pharmacists, and Benefit Managers. Next, we have Senate Bill 115, Physician Assistant Scope of Practice. First up, we have Senate Bill 121. Today joining us in Senate Labor and Commerce is Senator Giesel and her staff, Jane Conway. Please join us, Senator Giesel, and welcome to Senate Labor and Commerce.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Senator Kathy Giesel. I have the honor of representing Senate District E in the Senate. Thank you for hearing Senate Bill 121 today, Mr. Chairman. This bill is about pharmacy benefit managers. Now, I know this is a very informed committee. I also know that the public is probably listening, so I will be a little bit basic here, but pharmacy benefit managers, this is a very, very complex subject. These folks, these entities that exist in our pharmaceutical drug chain are very obscure. They like to remain hidden, but they are as deadly as any virus out there. And that's what I want to highlight before we even start this. The reason we're looking at these entities is that they significantly affect the price of prescription drugs. And their effects are not transparent. This bill it was introduced last year, but we've spent the last year and a half working on it. We worked all interim on it. The bill you see before you just has been a tremendous amount of work trying to get it right, trying to get it clear. We worked with the Division of Retirement and Benefits. They're the people that actually contract with the pharmacy benefit manager for the state of Alaska. We worked with the Division of Insurance. They have a role in this. And we worked with the Department of Law, which you might wonder about. The reason the law became involved is these pharmacy benefit managers have contracts with the state. They contract through the Division of Retirement and Benefits. So in order to actually determine how much money the state was losing in its transactions through these pharmacy benefit managers, we needed to see the contracts. These contracts are secret. You can't actually get at the numbers. That's how the Department of Law became involved. We had to seek out their authorization to see the contracts. We couldn't see it all. You'll hear about that as you hear the bill. On a positive note, there is a companion bill, and that's really helpful because this is such a complex subject. I actually picked this bill up originally back in about 2015. Senator Dennis Egan, some of you knew him, served in the legislature. He carried this bill back before most people even knew about pharmacy benefit managers. And at that time, in 2018, actually, with the help of Representative David Guttenberg, we passed the first pharmacy benefit, this transparency bill.
That bill prevented pharmacy benefit managers from gagging pharmacists. There was a gag rule in place previous to that bill, which prevented pharmacists from saying to the customer, there's actually a less expensive generic that will do the same thing as this brand name drug, and you'd save X amount of money, or you would save X amount of money if you paid cash for this rather than going through your insurance. The pharmacists were prevented from actually disclosing that to their customers. That bill removed that gag. The purpose of this bill is transparency, as you see in the title, transparency in pricing and giving patients freedom of choice in where they get their drugs and how much they pay for them. The largest three pharmacy benefit managers take in profits of more than $300 billion a year. So where does that money come from? What you're going to find out is a lot of it comes out of customers' pockets and out of the state of Alaska. Congress itself is trying to do something about this. Maybe you've seen some articles in the paper about this in various publications. The poor old Congress, they can't get much done these days. And so they actually have lots of hearings on the subject and then set the subject aside. But we're not going to do that. We're going to pursue this. Lots of states are taking action on this themselves. There is a huge amount of information out about it. So in your packet, you're going to see a unique subject or the unique document, and that's a bibliography. We couldn't give you all the documents. You couldn't read them anyway. But this bibliography will give you lists of the articles and summaries about them. If you're interested, the links are there so you can look it up and actually see the information. So as I said, Mr. Chairman, this is a complex topic. It's very technical. And because of that, I would suggest, Mr. Chairman, that instead of going through a sectional at the moment, that you allow Brandy to go through this PowerPoint, which will kind of lay groundwork, not only for members of the committee, many of you know this information, but for members of the public who also care about this, and this way could get it informed. And then the section will be more meaningful. So at your pleasure, Mr. Chairman, thank you for hearing the bill.
Thank you very much, Senator Giesel. For the record, I'd like to let folks know that we were joined at 1:35 by the Honorable Representative Justin Ruffridge. Ms. Brandy, would you like to join us at the table? It's 3:26 p.m. here in the friendly confines of Senate Labor and Commerce. Up next, we have Senate Bill 115, Physician Assistant Scope of Practice. Here with us, we have the Honorable Bill Sponsor, Senator Lukey Gale Tobin, and her staff, Mackenzie Pope, to present the bill. Please begin your presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Lukey Gale Tobin. I have the honor and privilege of representing the communities of Fairview, South Addition, Downtown Anchorage, Government Hill, Jay Bear, and parts of Northeast Muldoon, East Ridge, and North Star in the Alaska State Senate. Today, I bring before you a bill that I believe will improve patient outcomes across the state. Senate Bill 15 would allow physicians' assistants to provide care to patients without the direct oversight of a corroborating physician. And I want to be very clear that in this bill, we have some very clear stipulations about education requirements and time with active practice in a collaborative agreement with a physician. But please know that nobody operates within our healthcare field in a bubble. They don't operate independently without the opportunity to call on a friend or call on a colleague when there is complex or unusual issues before them. And we know and we will hear in our invited testimony that that is the standard practice that our physician's assistants here in the state operate under. We know currently there is a limited number of physicians available to meet the demand of care across the nation. And here in Alaska, where 69% of our primary care providers are located in our urban center of Anchorage and Mat-Su, there is just not enough folks with medical knowledge to help provide that base level of care that our community so desperately needs. A majority of our physicians' assistants do operate in rural Alaska. We have data that showcases it's upwards of 90% of our physicians' assistants are operating in rural areas, providing that base level, those basic needs of quality medical care, doing so sometimes very far away from their collaborating physician. Sometimes that collaborating physician is located in Anchorage or in Fairbanks while they are operating in rural Alaska with an opportunity to send an email or give a phone call, but not necessarily the direct oversight that so many expect or anticipate when they hear about collaborating agreements. Under this bill, which was amended in Senate Health and Social Services, the physician's assistants with more than 4,000 hours will be able to operate independently. And I do want to note, just so that this information is provided to you here in the committee, that physician's assistants are not empty vessels. They don't come into the world providing medical care. They have quite a bit of professional and lived experience underneath their belts. On average, the physician assistants, prior to entering their very robust accredited program, will have over 3,000 hours of direct patient care, whether as a paramedic or as a medical assistant. Once they enter that independently accredited program, they take classes and do clinical rotations, often alongside other medical students, for 27 months. They are learning both in the classroom and the clinical setting. Once they graduate, they are requested must maintain their education with 100 hours, continuing education credits every 2 years, and take a comprehensive exam every 10 years. This is an addition to the required national certifying exam and being licensed here in the state of Alaska. Physician's assistants have quite a bit of professional experience underneath their belt, but we want to be very clear in this legislation that they are not MDs. They are not medical doctors. They have a different lane that they are in. A colleague said to me the other day, when I think about physician's assistants and medical access here in the state, I should be thinking about it like access on a road. We have the roadway for the cars, we have the roadways for the walkers, we have the roadways for the bikers. Everybody's going in the same direction, just different modalities. And that those specific user groups have the specific lane they are supposed to be staying in. And here in this bill, we want to ensure that within the scope and education that physician assistants have experience, that they are staying in their lane, but they're doing so by increasing access to quality care in our communities. Alaska has some of the highest needs and highest costs for healthcare services. And in conjunction with some of the most limiting regulations for physician's assistants in the United States. They are subject to the Prescription Drug Monitoring Program. They also must comply and be registered with the Alaska Drug Enforcement Agency. And nationwide, physician's assistants are granted prescriptive privileges in every state where they have commensurate pharmaceutical training. They are asked to do quite a bit, and we are asking for them to be able to do so as long as they have the education experience underneath their belt so that they can continue providing that access to quality care here in the state. We will hear from our invited testimony about their experiences, about their backgrounds. I look forward to having that opportunity to share their stories with you and the committee. If it is the will of the committee, I will now ask my legislative aide to walk you through a sectional analysis of the bill.
Thank you very much, Senator Chauvin. Committee members have questions for the bill sponsor. Seeing none. Ms. Pope, would you please bring us through the sectional?
For the record, my name is Mackenzie Pope, staff to Senator Lukey Gale Tobin, and I am here to provide us sectional analysis of Senate Bill 115. Section 1 amends AS08.64.107 by changing the term regulation to licensure and scope of practice. And that change allows us to change the way that PAs work in Alaska. Section 2 amends AS08.64.107 by adding four new subsections. Section B describes the procedures and evaluations that physicians' assistants can perform, including their ability to perform health histories, physical examinations, treat disease and injury, and prescribe, dispense, order, and administer Schedule 2, 3, 4, and 5 controlled substances under federal law if they have that appropriate Drug Enforcement Administration registration number. Subsection C establishes that a physician assistant with less than, and pardon my error here, this should say 4,000 hours as amended in Senate Health and Social Services hours practice may only operate under a collaborative agreement if they have less than those 4,000 hours in a hospital, clinic, or other clinical setting. These collaborative agreements must be in writing and must describe the collaboration that will happen between the physician and the physician assistant. Subsection D requires that a physician assistant in a collaborative agreement or the collaborating physician shall provide a copy of their collaborative agreement upon request to the state medical board. Subsection E defines that collaborative agreement. Section 3 amends 8.64.107 to authorize a physician assistant to practice medicine independently. Again, those exclude physician's assistants with less than 4,000 hours. This only pertains to those that clear that high bar. Section 4 amends AS11.71.900 to include physician's assistants under the definition of practitioner. Section 5 amends AS21.07.010 to disallow a contract between a participating healthcare provider and healthcare insurer from including a provision that imposes a practice, education, or collaboration requirement on physician's assistants, which is inconsistent with or more restrictive than the requirements stipulated under the statute. Section 6 removes the direct supervision requirement for physician's assistants under the definition of attending physician in statute, which allows employees to designate physician's assistants as responsible for their care under the Alaska Workers' Compensation Act. And finally, Section 7 removes the direct supervision requirement for physician's assistants under the definition of healthcare provider under statute, which allows physician's assistants to provide medical services as a provider within the Department of Corrections. And that concludes the sectional analysis for this bill.
Thank you very much, Ms. Pope.
If once again, for the record, Senator Lukey Gale Tobin, representative for Senate District I. If there's any questions, we are happy to take them now. We also have some invited testifiers who probably could provide much more insight than we could about their experiences, their backgrounds, the rigor of their academic performance and expertise, and also any additional questions that might come from committee members.
If we could hear from your invited testifiers, that would be great. Which of them would you like to go first? Jenny, while you come up and speak to us, I'm going to pass the gavel to Senator Gray Jackson. I'm going to take a quick break, but I'll be right back. But please begin. Passing the gavel now to Senator Gray Jackson. Please state your name and affiliation for the record and begin your presentation.
All right. My name is Jennifer Fayette. I am speaking to represent the Alaska Academy of Physician Assistants as Legislative Committee Co-Chair and past president.
Please continue.
All right. Hi, my name is Jennifer Fayette, as I just said. I'm a lifelong Alaskan and practicing PA in Anchorage. PAs provide essential, high-quality medical patient-centered care throughout Alaska. I'm sure each of you have family members that have been cared for by a PA. A PAs diagnose illnesses, develop and manage treatment plans, manage their own patient panels, and often serve as the principal healthcare professional for patients, especially in rural Alaska. They hold their own state license, their own medical liability insurance, and their own DEA license. They are responsible for the care they provide. PAs are a crucial component of the healthcare system in Alaska. Healthcare worker shortages have been ongoing issues for Alaska since territorial days, and the demand continues to increase. Alaska has unique challenges in access to care and delivery of care. We see this in our rural areas, but also in our specialty care in Anchorage and Fairbanks. Some patients will wait over 9 months before they can see a rheumatologist or endocrinology specialist. This is only getting worse. Simply put, we have too few healthcare workers to fill the current demand. State projections indicate Alaska is expected to have the most significant shortage moving forward of any state. The PA profession was created in the 1960s to improve and expand access to care. This goal has not changed. Alaska would benefit greatly from updating the state PA practice laws and would keep our local PA graduates and draw more providers as well. I would like to take a moment to clarify some of the topics that have been discussed since SB 115's introduction. I apologize for repetitiveness in some of these points, but I think they're very important. PAs are highly trained healthcare professionals. Their broad generalist medical education makes them uniquely flexible and able to adapt to the evolving needs of the healthcare system. There are 306 accredited PA programs in the U.S. There is only one independent accrediting body, the Accreditation Review Commission of Education for the Physician Assistant, ARCPA. ARCPA includes representatives from the American Academy of PAs, the American Medical Association, the American Academy of Family Physicians, American College of Surgeons, American Academy of Pediatrics, and American College of Physicians, as well as the general public, assuring these programs must all adhere to the same high accreditation standards. The PA curriculum is modeled from that used in medical schools and with didactic and clinical rotations, often alongside medical students. The average PA program applicant, as Senator Tobin said, has over 3,000 hours of direct patient contact experience prior to even applying. PAs must complete specific prerequisites in their undergrad degree as well. PAs then complete the 27 continuous months, approximately 3 academic years. I can provide you with further detail on those requirements if necessary. The clinical year will also include another 2,000 to 2,500 hours of supervised clinical practice. After graduation, PAs must pass the comprehensive exam to become certified. This is offered only by one organization, NCCPA, and must be passed every 10 years. PAs are also required to complete 100 hours of CME every 2 years in addition to state requirements. These are all in place to ensure continued excellence and quality of care from PAs. Personally, I worked in cardiopulmonary rehabilitation at Providence Hospital and then for a wellness clinic in the U.S. Air Force for 10 years prior to applying to PA school. 20,000 clinical hours. I had an undergraduate degree, a teaching certificate, and a master's degree prior to attending. I was not the most experienced in my class. PAs are not doctors, and we do not claim that our education is equal, but we are well-trained medical providers that have the education, training, and experience to help address Alaska's limited access to care. PAs are ready to do this in Alaska. We want to continue practicing alongside our fellow medical providers and collaborating when necessary, as all medical providers should. Last year, as president of AKAPA, I was contacted multiple times by rural and Anchorage clinics asking to explain current state regulations and how to be in compliance with them. I was often asked why anyone would hire a PA when it would cost them not only to find collaborating doctors, but then also to have to pay the doctor's expenses to meet the quarterly requirements for collaboration. Restrictive PA regulations and statutes impact patients and the PA profession in the state. When PAs are bypassed due to administrative barriers, it is driving qualified providers and new graduates out of the state and further limiting access to care. Research shows that most successful healthcare teams are those that fully utilize the skills and abilities of each team member and support efficient patient-centered healthcare. The collaborative agreement has and is being modified in many states. These changes give PAs authority to practice to the full extent of their education, training, and experience. These changes range from no requirement for postgraduate hours to one state with 10,000 hours. Less discussed is the fact that several branches of the federal government, including the military and the Indian Health Services, have long ago removed or modernized physician supervisory and collaboration requirements for APPs. They recognize their ability to practice autonomously and safely in thousands of different practice settings and assignments. A recent observational study was published in the Journal of Medical Regulations spanning a 10-year period. It found that removing restrictive laws and regulations of PA practice does not increase the overall risk to patients or increase rates of malpractice within the U.S. healthcare. There are many studies and reviews of various aspects of PA practice, including their role in healthcare delivery, their impact on patient outcomes, their education and training, and their integration into healthcare teams. They focus on PAs, and the vast majority show positive findings for the healthcare system, healthcare teams, and our patients. SB 115 will define the PA scope of practice at the statute level, assuring more restrictive changes cannot be made that degrade the profession and limit access to care to Alaskan patients. It will remove requirements for a specific relationship between a PA physician and any other healthcare provider after a set amount of postgraduate clinical hours. It will also recognize PAs as practitioners alongside those already established in the Alaska state statutes. MDs, DOs, podiatrists, and nurse practitioners. PAs are an essential part of the healthcare system. It is vital that Alaska remove barriers to PA practice and keep PAs relevant in Alaska's ever-changing healthcare environment. Thank you to the committee for your time and consideration.
Thank you, Jenny. Questions? All right. Up next is Christy Froiland. Christy, please state your name.
Hi.
Location for the committee and begin your presentation.
Hi, my name is Christy Froiland. I am a PA in Anchorage, Alaska. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee for the opportunity to be invited to talk again about the importance of SB 115. I'm a PA with 16 years of experience in medical dermatology, not Botox, not fillers, not cosmetics, but medical dermatology, skin cancers, acne, psoriasis, life-changing diagnosis for some people. In the past few weeks, there has been a lot of discussion about independence, education, and experience. I would like to remind everyone on the committee and everyone listening in as well that nobody practices alone. Medicine is and should be a team sport. If you're practicing in a silo, you are doing yourself and your patients a disservice. When I first started in medical dermatology, I worked very closely with my collaborating dermatologist. This allowed for close mentoring and guidance. Over time, we have become more akin to teammates, who are there to support each other, but function independent of each other in many ways. He's there if I need, but I see my own patient panel and I have my own network of resources to include surgeons for larger excisions, facial plastic surgeons for skin cancers on the face, oncologists for melanoma or other metastatic disease. My skills in dermatology can and do adjunct to family med, internal med, and urgent care medicine, as many who practice in those fields do not have the extensive experience that I do treating skin disorders. My background and experience have led to some experiences regarding the reality of PA practice and collaboration that I'd like to share with you. As a PA with 16 years of dermatology experience, I am able and honored to teach the family med residents from Providence Hospital. I'm on a faculty for the University of Washington, and the residents get some of their very limited dermatology experience from me. Yet, to practice, I must have a signed collaborative agreement. While discussing collaboration with some of these residents and other practicing physicians, I'm continually asked, what's my liability? This seems to be the main concern for physicians when hiring an experienced PA like me, a PA that likely has more specialty experience and more competence doing in-office procedures than many practicing docs. It's difficult to be continually seen as a liability, even with the skills and education that I bring to a collaboration or to medical practice. Skills and education that complement general medicine quite well. The question of liability comes up frequently, even at a large family med office that employs docs, PAs, and NPs. Recently, when a large family med office merged with a solo internal medicine physician, the question of that joining doctor asked, "You have PAs. What's my liability?" At this larger office, the newest PA had over 5 years of experience working in family med. Many of their PAs had over 15. PAs have the education and training for the jobs that we ask them to do in Alaska. They are liable for the care they provide. SB 115 defines PA scope of practice at a statute level and allows PA to be recognized alongside our fellow colleagues. Another main concern with collaborative agreements besides liability is the fees charged for collaboration. Many PAs know this, but I was shocked to find that doctors did not know this one truth. PAs pay for collaboration. In some way or another, it costs us money to work. In some offices, we are paid a lower percentage of the collection. If a PA works for a solo doc, we generally pay for the required second collaborator. Sometimes it's a percentage of collections. Sometimes it's a flat rate per month, like $2,000. Sometimes it's an annual bottle of wine. Other times, the fees can be quite prohibitive. At a PA-owned clinic, because she needed a collaborator, one doctor told her that their fee was 50% of collections. 50. At that point, why open? Why see patients? That office would be open to pay her staff and pay the collaborative physician. So she didn't open. She closed it down, and those patients went without. That's extortion. But technically, a PA like me can hire and pay a brand new doctor, mentor and train them, and they can supervise me. The system needs to be updated to reflect how PAs actually practice and serve Alaskans. SB 115 is about so much more than independence. SB 115 is about recognizing PAs as the providers that we are and defining their scope of practice at the statute level. Alaska is one of the hardest states to license PAs. And recently, with the state medical board's chair proposed regulation changes, not having these things in place at the statute level almost further decreased access to care and put Alaskan patient lives at risk. Please pass SB 115 for PAs, for Alaskan patients, and for healthcare in our great state. Thank you for inviting me to testify again today.
Thank you very much, Ms. Froiland. Are there other invited testifiers? Thank you very much, Ms. Pope. We're going to take some other people in the room, and then, unfortunately, due to time, we will pick up other public testimony at our next hearing. In the room we have, at this time, I'd like to open public testimony. In the room we have Wendy Smith.
I'm going to cancel my public testimonies on hold.
Good afternoon. My name is Wendy Smith. I'm a physician assistant. I greatly appreciate your time and effort, Chairperson Borkman and Senator Gray Jackson. I'm, again, physician assistant with over 20 years experience working locally here in Juneau at Juneau Urgent and Family Care. I wanted to share my story, but first want to say I do support SB 115 as written. I feel like a profession who relies on another profession to perform our duties is a little ridiculous, and I'm not sure that I see other professions doing this indefinitely. And so I feel that the 50 years of practice that physician, or pardon me, 64 years of practice that physician assistant profession has demonstrated safety and effectiveness in the U.S. healthcare system. So it's time to modernize. And this is exactly what SB 115 does. My biggest hurdle or, I suppose, advantage of SB 115 is collaboration. I know that being tied to one physician is archaic, and things have changed. We now have employed physicians instead of physician-owned practices, so the benefit financially to collaborate with a PA is just not there. Like you've heard from others, PAs tend to be a liability, as we aren't, financially benefiting the physician when they're employed by a system. And so why hire a PA? And that's my biggest personal interest. I know that access to care is important, and if we're losing rooted local providers because of regulation, something's got to change. As a physician assistant working in a small practice, which is directed by one physician, we do have to outsource our second collaborating. And if that relationship dissolves, then I cannot practice tomorrow. And so the limitations to the current statutes and regulations affects my ability to provide excellent care. I appreciate your time and effort, and thank you for considering SB 115.
Thank you very much, Wendy. Up next is Megan Hall.
Hi there. My name is Megan Hall. I'm from Anchorage, Alaska. Thank you for taking the time to consider this bill, Chairman Bjorkman and the committee. I'm a practicing PA in Anchorage. I've lived in Alaska since I was two, so most of my life. This bill is necessary to keep Alaska relevant in the increasingly competitive healthcare market for providers. As Alaska has changed over the last few decades, so have medical education and licensing requirements here and throughout the country. PAs were originally conceived to extend the reach of physicians to treat more patients in the primary care setting. Our profession has evolved to function in every specialty and every area of medicine. This has led to the increased access to vital care that is needed. The PA profession has just celebrated its 50th anniversary in 2017. Yes, we are a new profession. Yes, we are still evolving and adapting to the needs of our patients and the healthcare system. Yes, we are committed to patient safety and to collaborative medicine. SB 115 allows our profession to continue its adaptation and growth. Physicians, through their own evolution, have moved into a role of specialty and even subspecialty care. This is in response to the demand for highly educated providers and treatment options that require an elevated and unique expertise. The letters from extensively educated and fellowship-trained physicians who oppose this bill is further evidence of their profession's move towards specialization. Unfortunately, a medical system cannot function with only specialists. PAs are trained as medical generalists and are uniquely aligned to fill gaps in care where needed in an efficient and effective way. SB 115 would advance the PA practice and the healthcare system as a whole. Alaska is struggling to recruit and retain healthcare providers. I urge you to pass SB 115 and keep Alaska relevant in the healthcare market. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Ms. Hall. Unfortunately, we are going to hold public testimony open for the next bill hearing, and I would like to thank everyone who have patiently waited for some time online to provide testimony. Just because we can't take your oral testimony today doesn't mean that we don't care. We care about each and all of your perspectives, and I would urge you to submit written testimony to our email address at slac@akleg.gov. And we will have more public testimony opportunity orally at our next hearing on this bill. At our next meeting, we are going to hear two bills. That will happen on Friday, as I search for my script here. We'll meet again on Friday, March 1st. We'll hear Senate Bill 173 and Senate Bill 211. As there is no further business to come before the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee today, this meeting is adjourned at 3:55 p.m.